Hey, everybody. Welcome to Conversations with Jackie and Bobby. We're your hosts, Jackie and Bobby Angel, and this is the first recording of the two of us post-baby, baby Benedict.
We've welcomed another baby, and they're all sleeping or occupied right now, so we figured we'd record a quick episode, and I mean quick.
We're on borrowed time.
Yeah.
It's really just however long that child sleeps, but once, or the three-year-olds.
But once we start, it becomes a 30 to 40 minute.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, we could talk for a long time, but our three-year-old is in a little princess dress that is very uncomfortable. And I'm like, are you sure you want to wear that before we try to record a podcast? And the baby is sleeping. Had a little hard time because he had some gas in there, but we got it out. So
don't we all?
Don't we all?
So yes, we welcomed our newest baby 7 weeks ago as of recording.
Oh, yeah. Today's Tuesday. Yeah, 7 weeks. Oh, and his name's little Benedict. Benedict, jokingly, when Pope Benedict died, I said, Bobby, we can name him Benedict and call him Benny. Because if you didn't realize, all of our nicknames in our family end with like an E. So like Bobby, Jackie, Abby, Zaylee, Johnny, SD. And I was like, Benny. And I always think of, what's that movie? How to ditch a guy. No.
Lose a guy.
Yeah, how to lose a guy in 10 days. And she's like, Benny, Benny, boop, boop. And so I always think of, or people think, but Benny and the Jets. But anyways, Benedict, both the saint and the Pope, baller. So.
And the Cumberbatch.
Yeah, people are like, did you name him after Pope Benedict? No, we named him after Cumberbatch. No, I'm just kidding. We did not. Although, great actor.
Sherlock is great. He was the easiest or quickest delivery.
And
thanks be to God.
Yeah, I was praying for an easy labor after.
Even though he was late and a chunker.
Oh my gosh. After number four, was just not a fun labor. So like the other three were great. I was like, let's have one like that, like where it's like 3 hours of tough labor comes out. But number four was just really difficult. So anyways, this was the first one that was at a birthing center, Flourish Birth Center in Flower Mound. Oh my gosh, their midwives are amazing. Love them. They did such a great job. They just took care of me. And it was the first time I'd ever been tested for progesterone because I had had three miscarriages between Esther and Benny. And they actually tested me for my progesterone, which, by the way, if you have like struggle with miscarriage, most OBGYNs won't even suggest giving you progesterone until you've had like four miscarriages, which is... I've had so many women say, I have the baby I have today because of progesterone. So anyways, they tested me for my thyroid stuff, my progesterone, and I supplemented. That was wonderful. They just took such good care of me. It was the first time I was going to ever attempt a water birth, which I was super excited about because birth is painful as heck, but it's possible. Like I've always been unmedicated.
Been unmedicated.
Yeah, Bobby's been unmedicated. Our first child, we delivered at home unintentionally, and Bobby caught her. We delivered her in our bedroom, not intentionally. And then the other three went to hospital, which also had midwives. But this one, I was like, okay, water birth. I know warm water helps the pain. And the other ones have been painful, but it's been possible and it's been doable. And like, our bodies are amazing. Like, what we can do as women is pretty amazing. So anyways, we were a week and a half later than expected. I did all the things, every single thing you can think of to get the baby out, even to the point of drinking castor oil. Ugh. Castor oil. There was one day after my due date that I did castor oil and like pumping to try to get, and I had contractions all day and nothing. And so finally baby came. That was a Friday. Saturday, I went and get checked. She's like, listen, you're like 4 to 5, you're like 4 centimeters, but I can stretch you like 6 or 7. And she's like, this baby should be coming. And you're like 50% effaced. But sure enough, Benny waited three more days.
He was in no rush. And no. All those numbers mean nothing to men,
apparently.
By the way.
Well, they don't mean anything now to me either because they told me the week earlier I was 4 to 5 centimeters.
Right.
And like, oh, you're effaced and baby's coming. Nope. A week goes by. Nope. And then like my mom was here for 15 days, was going to leave on Monday the 5th. Baby still was not here Monday the 5th. Baby was due June 1st. We thought it was going to be May 24th because of how big he was. We were told like, he's like a week earlier. Finally, my mom, thank God, she extended her flight a few days. And my mom went to bed at 9 o'clock at night. We stayed up and watched the rest of a movie. And then I start feeling some stuff, but I've been feeling contractions like all day Friday. So I was like, whatever, I'm starting to feel some stuff. I was like, let's just keep going. And then around 11, I was like, maybe we should go to bed because I'm feeling kind of some contractions here. But again, they could be Braxton Hicks. Around 11:30, I felt like a stronger one. That's what the trick is. If you're having contractions, like hum or sing through them. And those are like, you know, first stage. If you can't hum through a contraction, you have to stop and breathe. That's when they're getting more intense. Like, that's the change. So Bobby was like, oh boy. He noticed that there were a couple contractions.
I've seen this before.
Yeah. You were in bed trying to sleep, but not really sleeping. And I was like, oh boy, I just had two that I had to breathe through. And they were like 4 minutes apart, but then 9 minutes apart. So I was like, oh gosh. And the thought of like having to get our two oldest daughters out of bed at midnight and to call the midwife at midnight and get everyone in the birthing center.
Because they wanted to be there.
Yeah, our two oldest daughters are like, they want to be there for the birth of their little brother. And they're, you know, 8.5 and 7. They really wanted to be there and see what it was like. And I was like, great. I want them to see what it's like because I want them to see like it's possible. It's not like the movies ever portray. I'm telling you, I have never seen a movie or TV show that has portrayed birth accurately. They literally in movies, they go from like 0 to 80. They don't ever have like the first stage of labor. They skip over that and just all of a sudden you're pushing. But anyway, so I started feeling some stronger ones. I called the midwife and I was like, I've had a couple intense ones like that I couldn't hum through. Like I literally had to stop and breathe. I think we should get there. She's like, do you want to labor at home a little more? I'm like, no, probably not. So she's like, I'll be there in 20 minutes. I'm like, great. We got the girls out. It's about 11 minutes away. And when we got there, I was still thinking, like, they're not super strong. Like, they're strong. We have to pray through them. And Bobby, like, prays Hail Marys with me, like, Hail Mary, full of grace. And I'm, like, breathing. It's, like, a really good breathing way to breathe. And I had told the midwives, like, I'm a quiet laborer. I breathe. I just Bobby prays and I breathe. So we got there, like, 12:50 in the morning or at night. Got in the tub around 1:30 because that's a big tub. It took a while to fill. Around 1:30, finally got in the tub, got in and out a couple times to go to the bathroom because when you're pushing everything out. You know what I'm saying?
I do now.
Bobby's also pushing everything out too. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm in the tub. I'm still thinking, I really hope this is not like 10 more hours because I got everybody here. And the midwife is even kind of looking at me like, she's got time. Well, all of a sudden, I had two contractions that were painful enough to make me start sweating. And I felt like I was peeing myself in the water. And I think it was my water kind of breaking. And I told her, I said, I feel like my water's kind of breaking. So she goes outside and she writes down because it was like 2:04. She goes ahead and calls the other midwife and the birth assistants to come because the other midwife wanted to be there. She's been working with the two midwives had both been working with me. And she also helped me with my miscarriage. And so she's like, I want to be there. And she's in the hallway. I have two contractions that were like caused the sweat. That was probably the transition. And then all of a sudden I start having a contraction where I'm like, I'm breathing, but then I'm like pushing, which is, I'm like, what? Cause normally transition is not that fast. And I start pushing and Bobby knows that sound too. Cause he's like, oh boy. So I call the midwife and I said, and I think she hears it from the hallway and I go, should I be pushing right now? And like after I have a pushing chart, I'm like, should I be pushing right now? She's like, well, let me check. And she's like, well, the head is right there. So at what time? 2:18?
2:18 a.m.
So she's calling the midwives at 2:04 thinking she has about an hour to go probably. And the baby was born 14 minutes later, which was awesome. So it was like three pushing contractions, I think, right? Well, you were there. You have more. I was like in a different place in life.
Adrenaline is kicking either way. And you just don't know how long it's going to be.
Oh, my God. You don't.
Then you ask, like, is it okay to push? And The midwife said, well, there's the head. So go for it.
Yeah, because Esther's birth was the only birth that was so painful that I said it was so painful. And it was really early in the morning. We'd been up for 2 days at the airport? Oh, Lord have mercy. At the hospital. So Esther's was the only birth that I ever said, I don't know how much longer I can do this. It's so painful and I'm so exhausted.
Well, that doubt of, I don't know if I can do this.
Well, yeah, because they kept telling me like, you're not progressing. And that's like really, you feel like all the disappointment and hopelessness and rushing in with that happens. But this baby, I literally was like so shocked that I was pushing, which I'm like, yes, like if that is the case and you just got to get over the ring of fire, which is when that baby's head is there and you literally have to push out they like say in Bradley, like the biggest poop of your life. And it's really the most pain. It's the ring of fire. So I push the head out.
So celibacy.
Celibacy. You're like TMI. Obviously, if you've watched this, you know we have I have no filter. So push the head out. And then one more push that body out. And that baby, like literally.
Set the record.
Set the record for at the birthing center of being the biggest baby they've ever had. They said, she told me that they had a baby come that was 10'3". Mm-hmm. But they're like, they try to break the record. So our baby was 10 pounds, 5 ounces. None of our other kids.
They readjusted the scale.
They recalibrated because
they didn't believe what they were seeing.
And they were like, okay, you had a 3-month-old. I was like, our other kids were like 7 pounds. One was 8 pounds. Our last one was 9.5. So at this trajectory, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. But Benny is, a 3-month-old, essentially. He's in 3-month-old clothes. He's 7 weeks. But he's a chunker. He's cute, adorable, little guy.
Well, and they treated you with such dignity.
Yeah.
I was blown away. Just
the assistance, like getting out of the tub, wiping my leg.
The patience, not rushing you through anything. And just how beautiful. It's intense. Like we all go through it if we're here, of like labor and delivery. And the fact that it wasn't this kind of sterile experience of trying to get you in, get you out as soon as possible. It just was so human.
I will say, so benefits between a hospital and a birthing center, benefits of a hospital is they feed you, right? Like you get food and they feed you and someone takes care of you. The downsides of a hospital is they are waking you up every 2 hours, and they're waking the baby up every 2 hours. And so finally, when you're about to get back to bed and you're rocking baby to sleep, they come back and wake you up. And it doesn't matter what time. And I'm like, let me sleep. You're so tired. You just want to sleep. So that was the downside. The benefits of a birthing center, they send you home. So I had the baby at 2:18. They sent us home at 5:45 a.m. So 3 hours later, they checked me, checked baby, sent me home. And 24 hours later, a nurse came to check baby, to check me, came to my house. Now, it was great because my mom was there. My mom was making me breakfast. Like, our kids were... Oh, and the other thing, when you're at a hospital, your kids aren't screaming and yelling in the background. It's like, oh, vacation. But yeah, there's pros and cons to both. But the birthing center was an amazing experience. The birthing tub was an amazing experience because that really did... It lessened the pain. And when you watch... I had watched... water births on YouTube to prepare the girls, and I had them watch it to see like, this is what mom's been going through, because the only sounds I made was when I was pushing. And the kids, I asked the girls, I said, did that scare you when I was making those sounds? And they were like, yeah, like, and one of our kids was holding, because I was like, you're pushing loud. And then baby comes out and they're so excited, and Abby starts filming, and there's like her going, oh, he's pooping, like, yep. Starts pooping on me. So it was amazing. I'm just so glad I didn't have to be transferred to the hospital. There was nothing, no complications.
So if you've been following along, thank you for your prayers. It's a miracle to conceive a life. It's a miracle to get that life to delivery and out into the world. And after 3 miscarriages in a row, we didn't know what was in the cards.
We didn't know, like, is this, and then we've had people who've made it all the way full term and had their stillborn, and it's devastating. So
right.
I literally am just like, Lord, each day, just like, Jesus, I trust in you. God, I don't know what your plans are. Like, I just, Jesus, I trust you, So we're just grateful.
And then they're out and they're crazy and they're screaming, and they'll be teenagers before you know it. And speaking of teenagers, you just came back from the Steubenville conference. I didn't realize, I know it's been 20 years since my high school graduation. I'll date myself, but that also means it's been 20 years since my first Steubenville conference.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was actually hitting me more, just the weight of like, wow, it's been 20 years since I was just a teen just coming to know the Lord and getting rocked at that conference on a main campus in Ohio at Franciscan University. And to think of all the conferences that have been happening, all the lives that have been just impacted by the Lord through these conferences, the people that put them on, the worship teams, the speakers, and now to be like a part of it, at the level of like, I, you know, I'm married to a speaker in the sense of like, I was a teen just coming out of like ignorance into believing my faith to now, again, I get to be like a part of the support team, so to speak, for all these conferences, all these teens that are on the receiving end, especially post COVID, especially in the world we're in now where it's desperately needed more than ever.
Yeah, it was, and I was, it was 21 years for me because I'm a year older than Bobby. I'm a cougar. I'm 9 months older, you know.
Doesn't matter. Counts.
So me, it was 21 years ago that I had my conversion at a student mill conference. Just changed my life, completely changed my life. So I remember, yeah, I think Jim Beckman was like, I'm pretty sure I was at that conference that you did. Matt Maher did the music. It was at student mill West in 2002. So I'm pretty sure it was Matt Maher. Maybe Tom Booth, and Jim Beckman thinks he was the host. I can't remember. I just remember the lead. I was on lead, which back then they called Young Apostles, and it changed my life. So now being a speaker, I know how impactful it was in my life. And just, you know, sometimes it takes a while. Like the guy who played music was Andrew Laubacher, who was, I took him to his first student mill conference when he was 15, and I was the youth minister at 22. I just graduated college. And, you know, for him, he literally, it wasn't until his third conference that he really had a conversion. And we'll have him on soon because we have some fun stories with him.
Oh, he has stories.
Oh, we have stories. Because he lived with us for a year and a half, like when he was a young adult. Anyway, so we have some fun stories. But it was a great team because I had Andrew and my friend Chica, and they're both the godparents of Esther, who's our fourth. And then Enny Hickman was a host, and we go way back. He's like my big brother. And then Joel Stepanek, who is like, has become a good friend.
He's
and
a hoot.
He is a hoot, and he's just so fun, so smart. I love when he's on it. So it's great when you have a team that you like, they're like family, you know? And they, it was like, especially with bringing, this was Benedict's first trip on plane.
Yeah.
And then my pastor was also, Father Edwin, was the chaplain. So it was like, oh my gosh, we have like, Father Edwin and Alob and I, and then my friend who was helping me, Caroline, we all go to St. Anne's and Capel. So it was like, I have my church here, and then I have like my family friends here, like just family. They feel like family for Benny's first trip on a plane at a conference. And it was just beautiful. And the teens, like, man, what a, just looking, when you're a speaker and you look out at the crowd, you can see people. Like, you see their body language. You see when people are crying. You see when people are bored. You see when they're asleep. And to see the change between Friday night and Saturday after the women's session, it's just always so beautiful to see how God is moving throughout the weekend. And not just teens, like, to see chaperones and priests to come up to you and say, that wasn't just for my teens, like that was for me. And I just think, even for me, like, God's always working in my heart. And there are things that I'm saying, because just FYI, just because you're a speaker, it doesn't mean you're not saying it to yourself.
Right.
Because there are so often, so many times speakers can say things that we ourselves struggle with or don't practice. Like when it comes to prayer, when it comes to courage, when it, you know, whatever it is. Like, so God was speaking to me as well. And it was just beautiful to, and I just, man, I love seeing how God, I think that is the one of the most privileged things in life, is like to see someone's conversion, to see God moving in people and God working in people. And so often you don't see the fruits, but there are times that people come up to you 10 years later. Like, I think at the SEEK conference this year, I had multiple focus missionaries come up and say, Jackie, I saw you when I was 14 and now I'm 24 and I'm married. And like, it was your women's session that like taught, you know, you shared about waiting till marriage to have sex, or like you waited, you said not to settle, and now I'm getting married to the most amazing man. I'm like, oh, that makes me so happy. Like, that God worked in them. So it's just, man, it was beautiful. So glad I got to be there.
Well, I got teary eyed when you sent a picture of our pastor, Father Edwin, who was the main priest for the weekend.
Holding, it was his first time at doing a conference.
First time being the lead priest.
Chaplain, yeah.
Holding Benny, who he just baptized.
Yeah.
Like his first Steubenville, he's 6 months, so I know it doesn't really count, but it counts that he was there.
Who's 6 months?
Benny.
6 weeks.
6 weeks, sorry.
Sorry, I was like, wait, what?
He's in 6 month clothing.
Yeah.
But he's...
pretty much.
To be held by like the priest who just baptized him at this conference where I had my conversion 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Was just, I saw that picture. I was like, levels. There's levels happening here.
Yeah, so it was really cool.
And they have a bishop, too, that was just so present and joyful there.
The bishop, Bishop Byrne. Oh, my gosh. And his dog, his sweet little black lab, his name's Zelly, and our daughter's name is Zaylee. It's the same thing, right? But by the way, I think Bishop also learned that the plant Zaylee is named after azalea, which is a flower, an azalea flower. By the way, they have an azalea festival in Tyler, Texas, which is amazing. But Zaylee is the mother of St. Therese of Lisieux, St. Zaylee. And his dog was named Zelly. So in heat, Bishop was just very joyful.
Episcopup
is. So it was just a great weekend. And I was thinking, I don't know why I just thought of... Oh, I was just thinking of like the parts theory and how even the weekend, Bobby's been learning about in psychology parts theory.
Yeah, the internal family system and the parts theory, and this stuff is kind of all over right now.
Dr. Bob Schutz and Dr. Jake Kim just had a parts theory guy on their podcast, Restore the Glory. That's really good. It's the podcast about loving God, your neighbor, and yourself, and it's the one about loving yourself.
Yeah.
Really check it out. It's very good. But you're learning about it.
I'm learning about it through the Catholic Psych Mentor Program, which I'll talk about in a future episode, because they use that quite a bit. And it is beautiful how 95% of it works with adequate like Catholic anthropology. And thankfully, the guy who developed the theory didn't use any more complicated jargon than parts.
Right. To describe
this phenomena. And once you start hearing it, you hear it everywhere.
Yeah.
This is how we kind of describe our experience of like a part of me is really excited for this. A part of me is also afraid. And that's true. Like very rarely are we feeling 100% towards something. Like we could be 98% excited to go to this school, to take this job. There's 2%. Like there's a part of us that is a little afraid.
Yeah.
A little worried. That's normal.
Yeah. And I think in ministry and speaking, I've been using that a little more of, I think when I had my conversion and when I was young, I was a little more, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand the nuance of the human person. I thought like, how could part of you be like all of you, you're all in, you know, and you are. But even Jesus, like I was reading Psalm 22 today where it's like, oh God, like God, why have you abandoned me? And which Jesus prays from the cross. He's praying Psalm 22, which is, my God, why have you abandoned me? Like part of him feels abandoned. But then he says, yet you're my ancestors have trusted you. Like I trust you. I know you're going to come through. And even when Jesus is in the garden, he says, you know, Father, if you wish, take this chalice from me, but your will be done. So part of him is like, take this away, but I also freely lay my life down. So even Jesus used that. Like part of me feels this way, like abandoned, and yet part of me trusts in you. And we've all experienced that in life where, you know, I'm sure many of you, there are times you're like, I trust God, but man, part of me is really disappointed right now in how this worked out, or part of me feels rejected, abandoned, but part of me is, I'm so joyful. And so it's, the human person is much more complicated. I think children are much more black and white. Children, and so when you're kind of stuck in being a child, like not childlike, but when you're stuck with that view of, because children, their brains are not formed yet, so they do feel either all angry or all happy. Like literally before their age of reason, that part of their brain isn't developed yet, so they really do feel all angry. But then literally you're like, you want a cookie? And they're like, yeah. Like they could be screaming their head off and you're like, want a gummy bear? And they it's like switches like that. So their brain, like their emotional regulation isn't formed until the age of reason, which by the way, Abby said to the midwife, she's like, oh, well, he's not the age of reason yet. Like in the midwife. So our 8-year-old is talking about our 5-year-old boy. She's like, oh, well, he's not the age of reason yet. That's why he's the way, you know, and they start laughing because the midwife and the assistant were laughing. Like what 8-year-old talks about her brother not being of the age of reason? But we do.
I'm dying. Abby's also the one insisting on using the sonogram.
Oh, yeah. Which like, she allowed her to do. That was the other kind of cool thing. The midwife let our kids, she was like teaching them. She's like, homeschool lesson right here.
Right.
You guys can help find babies. So every time I had a visit, but Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think when you were sharing that earlier this morning, I thought of St. Augustine and the, you know, Lord, give me chastity, but not yet.
Right.
Like a part of me wants this. And I felt that all through college was like, I want to be chaste. Like I want to do this. And yet a part of you is holding back. And yeah. And I always forget the book. It's C.S. Lewis where he's using the analogy of like
Great Divorce, right?
Yeah. I think it's The Great Divorce.
Yeah. That's the one about heaven and like.
I think so. It's the lizard on the shoulder that you've carried for so long. You can't imagine life without it. Right. And the angel transforms it into this great stallion. But we've got to first be willing to look at like, what is this part of me holding on to?
Yeah.
That has helped me get through so many situations before, has become my crutch, has become my pacifier.
Yeah.
In a way that a part of me does not want to let go of.
I think that was in the Saturday. I did the Saturday night keynote. I said that which part of you, what part are you holding back from God? Is it like, what is it? You know, is it your finances? Is it that you're afraid of losing this part of yourself? So exactly. But it makes me think of, we just watched A Hidden Life, which our friends were telling us, like, you have to watch A Hidden Life.
I've had people telling me for a year or two now.
And I had never heard it. People have been talking to you about it.
But it's just with kids, finding time for a 3-hour movie, that is meaningful. It's not like a popcorn movie. You just got to, you can leave it on in the background.
Yeah. You want to actually watch it.
This is more of a work of art you've got to give your attention to. So it took a while for us to finally get around to it.
And it's based off the life of Blessed
Franz Jägerstätter, which I am just learning about his life as of late.
Yeah.
I feel a little behind the eight ball here, but man, this humble Austrian farmer who refused to take the vow, like the oath of loyalty to Hitler's regime when the Nazis took over Austria. He would not serve in the military. He understood what was behind the philosophy of Nazism and refused to enlist again, like in the army. And against all the peer pressure of his town, of his society, even the clergy at the time.
Even his priest, even the bishop.
And he was executed. He was a martyr of conscience, August 9th, 1943.
Oh, wow, it's coming up.
And was pretty much unknown, except outside of his small Austrian town. But then his witness caught the eye of some choice journalists who put his writings and his story into a book, which was picked up by some clergy. And so his story really got out through, I'd say, the Holy Spirit to where he is actually now a blessed. He's on the way to sainthood in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And the film is beautiful. I didn't know what to expect going into it. Like how historically accurate is it? How is the church going to be portrayed? Like what liberties are, but I mean, it was beautiful. And,
it's very artsy and it's slow. So don't expect like a Marvel movie. You know what I'm saying? Like it's beautiful.
Even like a super dramatic World War II movie. It's the story of a humble farmer and his wife in living in extraordinary times. And that question of like, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling you earlier, his story is, part of me doesn't feel ready to talk about it because I'm still processing it. But like, I love Maximilian Kolbe, who was a Franciscan friar, a martyr at Auschwitz. Blessed Franz, he was married. He had 3 daughters. So it's more like, here's a dad who knew what it likely meant if I say no to swearing an oath to Hitler.
Like, I know I'm going to be... Well, especially under the peer pressure, the pressure of saying, like his bishop kind of saying, just take the oath and we know in your heart.
Like, yeah. So that dilemma too of like I can believe something in my heart and my outside actions have nothing to do. It's like, no, it's like all of me has to be in this. Like,
but they were pressuring him just to take the oath, but like, God knows what your heart. And he's like, I can't. That would be untrue. Like he knew. I was like, wow, knowing that you would be leaving your wife behind and your 3 daughters and like they had to farm the farming, like the wife then had to all the work. So say what she said or what you read in the book of what her...
Well, she basically, she wanted her husband to live, but it came down to like realizing his conscience is so moved in this direction, which was also a bit, it was prophetic and that was ahead of its time, because at that point there was a belief of the ruler of the country bears more moral guilt,
culpability,
than the soldier.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of a, you know, you are not ultimately,
culpable for
the actions of your state. However, Blessed Franz is like, yes, I am, because I can see too, this isn't a just war. There's pillaging and there's murder of non-combatants happening, yeah, on top of the, just the evils of the philosophies underneath Nazism. And so he just was very like, he just saw the truth and was so convicted that I can't serve. Yeah. I can't
take an oath.
He said in one of his letters, I want to save my life, but not through lies. I mean, just, ugh. So yeah, I picked up a book, Franz Jägerstätter, Letters and Writings from Prison, that I'm working my way through, and you can't just kind of like blitz through it. You just have to like put it down, because every couple pages it's like, it really holds up a mirror to like, what would I do? His examples rocking me, and the fact that he's a blessed.
Because you just said like Maximilian Kolbe was a celibate who stepped in place, said, I will take the place of this man because he has a family.
Yeah.
And I just think like, if someone was just going to kill me, that's one thing. But then when they like, yeah, then you're leaving a family behind. And then also the saints who like, they're like, we're not going to kill you. We're going to kill your family and torture them. If you don't renounce your faith, we're going to torture your husband. We're going to torture your children, which happened. There was a saint in the early, third century or 300s, who's all her sons, right? Then they torture. Do you remember who that was?
Not in the moment.
I know. I can't remember either. But like all of her sons, they tortured all of her sons. Like, mom, don't give up your faith. We will die for it. But I can't imagine. And then the other movie, Silence.
Yeah. With the Jesuits in Japan.
Ooh, which is like the other side, which is where like they were torturing like
Christians.
As long as the priest didn't relent, you know, give up his faith, they started torturing like his people. And so complete, oh man, both really good movies. And just, you see
dilemmas that no one wants to be in,
oh,
but
my gosh,
you stand with Christ at the cross. It's coming for all of us in small or big ways.
Right.
And
you think, what would I do in this situation? Because how easy would it be just to say, oh, I don't, God, you know my heart, that I believe in you, but in this moment, I'm going to save my life. And
yeah,
that's the
conviction to live, as the Russian author Solzhenitsyn said, implored the West, live not by lies.
That's his book, right? The title of his book, Live Not By Lies.
It comes from one of the speeches he gave after he was freed and wasn't allowed to return to Russia, just because he saw like what happens when you start just living by falsehood, when you stop affirming what is true, and the power of groupthink, the power of staying in this like togetherness of don't step too far out of bounds. Like, that social pressure is real, in person, online.
That you'll be canceled. The fear of being, I feel like that is something a lot of us have seen with teenagers right now, is this, and us, just like fear of getting out of the groupthink because you're so afraid of being canceled. You'll go viral and be canceled. Like, that is a scary thing. And it's interesting because, not interesting, but this is what scripture says. Jesus says, if you save your life, you will lose it. And if you lose your life for my sake and that of the gospel, you'll save it.
Yeah.
And so, oh man, yeah, it's like, if you try to save your own life, you're going to lose it. But if you lay your life down, because that's the greatest act of love, right, is to lay your life down for a friend and to lay your life down for Jesus. Whew.
Well, you just did a video recently with Catholic Vote, with their Edify, like, educational arm on biology.
It's not misogyny. Yeah.
Yeah, and very short video. We'll link it below. But even just those basic biological truths of male and female, the societal pressure to dismiss those and to move in this direction that we're like, this is not in accordance with truth, but the fear of speaking up, you know, putting your head above of the line, or you might get taken out.
Oh yeah, and there are people that hated that video. And granted, like, people were like, you didn't cite your sources of saying, like, even the opening line is like, boys, if you give them blocks, they'll build a city. Girls, they'll build a family. Which, by the way, my little Esther, I have two different sides of, what's it called? You don't know what it's called. Concealer. And she literally makes one a daddy and one a mommy. And yep. Then Johnny, our boy, makes anything a gun. And we don't even have a gun. Like, and our Johnny makes, like, everything. Like, he's shooting everything with, like, a stick. Anyways, and I say in the video, but not to say that girls can't do that. Not to say that boys can't play. Because Johnny has, you know, it's not like he doesn't ever play, hasn't ever played with a doll or Barbie, whatever. But you have two books that are, one is like The Male Brain, The Female Brain.
Yeah, same author, Louise Brizendine. I may have botched her name there, but.
And she's not Catholic, she's not religious, right?
No, but just wrote The Female Brain first and then later wrote The Male Brain, which
makes sense.
Much shorter. But she talks about, like, from the womb, we're getting flooded with these hormones that are really differentiating male to female, like our chemistry, how our bones are developed, like everything. And I mean, this is for another podcast, but the complementarity there, it's not one is better than the other. It's not, we have nothing to learn from the other. It's this, John Paul II called it this, like, integral complementarity.
And that I love being Catholic because you're like, some people will do this where they make men and women so like only men do this.
Like
only women do
this.
A caricature, which is what our society does actually. And being Catholic and even in psychology that is good, it says like, no, you can be a woman who likes to hunt and be a jock and you are still a woman. And you can be a man who is very sensitive and cares for children and be a stay-at-home dad, and you are still a man. Like, because of, yeah, we have to do another podcast about this, but because of the characterization of the culture, sometimes we go way too far and make a characterization of women and men, hence the whole trad wife movement, hence the alpha male movement, like, don't be a beta. And it's like, or how about, we are all so different, and you are a man because you have a male soul and a male body, not because you like babies and take care of children or because you're sensitive. Like, that's not what makes you. But there are things in general, the male brain, the female brain, that we have that we can complement each other and learn from. So that would be, and there's definitely people to interview about that. But
yeah. But just to come back to Blessed Franz for a minute,
yeah.
Highly recommend the movie.
A Hidden Life.
Yeah, again, I'm still chewing on his life and his example, on his commitment to living to the truth, wherever it goes, that being the best possible outcome. Like, even if it's in a gulag, even if it's canceled, even if, like, he wrote... one of his last letters before he was executed, he was in handcuffs, and he like St. Paul, he says, I'm writing in chains, but at least my will is not in chains.
Boom.
So now he's again on the way to sainthood. So there's verified miracles in accordance with him. It's not just that because that was also part of the ridicule, was like, what difference do you think you're going to make?
Yeah.
Not
like
taking the
oath.
You're just
one person. What difference would you make? And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
He's making a difference in our lives. How many years later?
Our baby's crying. So we're going to land the plane right here. And we did it. We made it through an episode. I want to say thank you to everyone who's been listening. We are almost at a year of this podcast.
Wow.
So thank you for listening, for watching, for all of the patrons we have on Patreon. Thank you so much. We've got some more goodies planned for this fall and winter. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. And yeah, and if you want to support us, go to, what is it, jackieandbobby.com/donate?
Patreon.
We'll put it in
We'll
the
link
notes.
It below.
Somebody will do that. Probably Bobby.
Probably me.
I don't do that. But yes, thank you guys so much. We'll see you next time.
God bless.